time for the Baseball Coaches Show here on Q92. This is Paul Ramo for Q92 Sports. We'll be visiting with area coaches here in the next hour.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
And a good Saturday morning, everyone. Paul Ramo here in the studio with our last... That's right, our last Baseball Coaches Show of the season. And, boy, that went fast. And I just want to remind everyone before we visit with Matt Munson of the Madison Mallards here, Region 9C Baseball, well, it's championship weekend, actually. At 11 o'clock this morning, the Clinton Cards will take on the Dumont Saints down in Mineota. Mineota hosting this weekend, today. And the Clinton-Dumont game is... to go to the state amateur baseball tournament. So a big game there for both those teams at 11 o'clock this morning in Mineota. And then the second game in Mineota will feature the Mineota Mudhens, who have already punched their way to the state tournament. The 1:30 game is for seeding purposes in the state. Of course, Region 9C, they take two teams to the state tournament. And so the 1:30 game, Mineota will take on the winner of Clinton and Dumont. And so... big day there for Region 9C Amateur Baseball. And let's talk amateur baseball with Matt Munson. Matt's the manager of the Madison Mallards. Good morning, Matt.
Yeah, good morning, Paul.
Well, hey, before we start talking Mallard baseball, we got to mention the grandstand at the Madison Memorial Baseball Field is down.
Yep, grandstand finally came down yesterday as well.
Not because of a storm.
Not because of the storm. No, but backstop as well. So, you know, Madison Baseball Association has been planning on replacing those two items and got a little bit later start than we wanted after our season, but that's finally down, and hopefully the rest of it will get taken away this next week and they can start getting ready for the new backstop and new grandstand. So it should be nice to get that done this fall.
Yeah, it was taken down yesterday morning. It doesn't take long with a hole, diggers.
Hats
off to the people responsible for that.
So Nate Heinrich's working on that. Kind of with the guidance of like Dylan Crowett, and then we'll have all the local electricians helping when we put that back together, and local construction crew. I think Dolly Construction will be helping as well. So should be good, using all local contractors to get the project completed. So should be an awesome and fun time for Madison area baseball.
Yeah, you know, change is hard for old people like me. I mean, there's a piece of Madison history there.
Yeah. The
grandstand. Built, I don't know, late 40s or something?
Early 50s? Yeah, I think according to Dick Newman, it was built in the 40s. Okay. You know, they made some use out of it over the past 20 years with trying to, you know, redo the upper deck and all that. But, you know, when the storm last year loosened up the sides and everything, I guess it was just time to go and just plan to build back better. And, yeah, of course, yeah, change is hard for some people, but it'll be a good change.
Oh, man, you know, what they're going to rebuild there is going to be amazing.
Yep.
It'll just help to improve the field that much more.
Yep. We got a good playing surface, and I think you just want to, you know, help the fan experience too, because getting the fans down to the ballpark, doing what we can there, makes it that much more enjoyable for the players as well.
That's right. Okay, Matt. Well, the Mallards were pretty busy last weekend, and Bart Hill was up there broadcasting some of your games, and, tell us all about it.
Yep, yeah, so it was a pretty busy weekend. You know, if everything fell into place, we were going to be playing three games on the weekend, and it ended up being just that. So worked out well for us. Of course, the final outcome isn't what we wanted, as we were hoping we would have been playing in that game this morning in Mineota, but the first game of the day, Saturday in Clinton, you know, we knew we were going to be pushing it with the rain forecasted. So, but we started the game on time. Throwing Brandon Bornhorst that first game, kind of our horse elimination game, do or die. You know, it's kind of, we wanted to make sure we had our horse out there, get us through the game. And, you know, when we know we're going to get good pitching, you know, we want to make sure that we're scoring some runs early, getting good hitting. And, you know, in that Benson game, we did just that. We loaded the bases with nobody out in the first inning. You know, unfortunately, followed that with two quick outs. But Evan Kells was able to get a base hit to knock in two runs. Then we were able to score another run to make it 3-0 after the first inning. You know, Brandon Bornhorst was just kind of scooting right along through three innings, then ran into some trouble with the Benson team. Three of the first four guys in the fourth inning had base hits. Another one sandwiched in there, reached on error. So they were able to score a couple runs, make it 3-2 before there was even an out recorded. I think they had second and third base with nobody out too, but Brandon just settled in. I think he got the next three guys out on three straight pitches, and it was three infield flies. So hats off to Brandon for working out of that jam. Just shows you the veteran pitcher that he is, doesn't get rattled very easily. Moving on to the top of the fifth, you know, Brandon got through that one quick, 1-2-3, but then the rain came. And I think it shut us down ultimately for about an hour and a half. There's first rainfall, tried to get ready after that, but then the rain came again. You know, we were unsure at that point, waiting around, are we going to move to Morris to try to finish? Do we have to wait till tomorrow, which would have been, you know, not good trying to sandwich all these games in or figure out how to play it the rest of the week. But, you know, basically we just ended up playing it by getting the field ready, start the game back up. You know, a lot of teams or, you know, majors, if you have that long of a rain delay, your starting pitcher isn't going back out there and throwing. But Brandon knew that in order for us to make it through the weekend, he was going to have to go back out there and finish the game. That's exactly what he did. He was able to work through the next four innings without giving up any more runs, and we were able just to kind of coast from there. You know, not what we want from our hitters, to not be scoring more runs, as we only ended the day with four hits in that game, and I don't think any after the fourth inning. But, you know, with Borney holding Benson down, we were able to come away with the victory there, 3-2. And that was able to move us on to Sunday, where we were to face Morris. You know, facing them earlier in the year, they beat us, I believe, 7-2 at home. So we knew this would be a tough game. You know, I believe that they're one of the best teams in the land of Ducks, best hitting team, I think, by far. It's just if they have the pitching. But you know, going into it, we had young Avery Whitnable, the lefty that hasn't pitched much for us. But you know, I kind of figured with Morris's left-handed hitters that they have, I think there's about four or five good hitters for them in the lineup. You know, they don't see lefties often in the land of Ducks. I think we maybe have two of the three total lefty pitchers in the whole land of Ducks, and we have two pretty good ones. So threw Avery out there. He pitched very well, able to work through some jams in the seventh inning and even the ninth inning. But, you know, again, same story. You want to score first and early. And we did that in the fourth inning. I think with two outs, we ended up having five hits in a row from the bottom of our order. So that was very nice to see. We were able to put on three runs in the fourth inning. Later in the game, we were able to tack on a run in the eighth to make it 4-0. And then we had 4-0 going in the top of nine, so we had some insurance runs, but then we had some errors and some hits, and you know, Morris did tack on two runs, but you know, we decided to leave Avery out there with two outs with another lefty up, and he was able to strike out that guy to end the game. So on that one, ended up beating Morris 4-2. We did have eight hits, and which is nice for Morris being such a good hitting team. We held them to three, so Avery did a phenomenal job on the mound. Only struck out seven through the nine innings, but you know, was able to get some easy outs on some swings that didn't look so good.
Yeah, really nice Eagles. Win for so, you guys.
Yep, yeah, huge win for us. You know, exactly what we wanted coming into it, to have, you know, our two of our better pitchers get through these two games without using anybody else. You know, that kind of knew that for that third game that we'd be set up with everybody that we needed to get through it. Or I guess so we thought when we started talking about that game. But, yeah, so it's a good game for us, good win. You know, I think that we were, you know, pretty excited heading into the Clinton game. But, you know, as we talk about that one, you know, I think the Clinton game, you know, having that break in between, I think, was definitely advantage for Clinton, that they didn't have to wait while we had to sit around, wait, stretch again, throw again, and get ready for the game. But, you know, as far as, you know, from a pitching standpoint, you know, we had Blake Bullschlager, Brandon Hill, Matt Inger at our disposal, three good pitchers. We started with Blake. Blake was able to work through the first four innings. In the first inning, you know, we did run into a jam. Clinton loaded the bases after an error, a walk, and a hit by pitch, and with nobody out. And, you know, that's kind of one of those things. It's almost like nervous that the game could be over right here already. But Blake was able to strike out the next guy. And then with Mike Ottleman up at the plate, you kind of had an idea that they might be trying something, whether it be a squeeze or a steal home type situation. And they did do that, and we were able to pitch out of that. And Matt was able to get the out recorded at home on a tag out. So that ended up being two outs, and then we got Mike to ground out to end that inning. So kind of pumped us up to get out of that. You know, we were able to come right back and get two guys on. In the second inning, runner on third and a runner on second, but weren't quite able to come up with the big hit. You know, throughout the game, we were able to get guys on, but, you know, just we'd scatter our hits around. We wouldn't follow up anything with another hit. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, Clinton coming in the third inning, you know, Matt Inger had gotten hurt his legs, and he's catching second game of the day. He's trying to work through it as much as possible. Clinton, you know, they walked to start up third inning, bunted a guy over, walked again, and then walked another time, but the run actually ended up scoring on a pass ball. So unfortunate there, that made it 1-0. And then we were just kind of weren't able to recover from that offensively. You know, what we didn't want to do was have Brandon Bornhorst throw again, but he knew the situation that we were in. He's going to do whatever needs to be done to try to get us the victory. And, you know, Blake being a little wild throughout his first four innings, we thought we needed to make a change. You know, that change didn't include Matt Inger because of his leg injury, and then didn't include Brandon Hill just because he hasn't thrown much this year. He's maybe more of a one- or two-inning guy. So threw Brandon back out there. He was able to shut the door for four innings. But offensively, we weren't able to get the job done. We had seven hits on the day. What's unfortunate in losing that game 1-0 is we only gave up two hits.
Oh, gee.
So, you know, we were right there. Our pitchers all year have done what they needed to do to keep us in games. It's just the hitting kind of fell off. And, you know, we knew coming into this that we're just going to need to score more runs. You know, going back to the Morris game, you know, I didn't think our pitching was going to hold them as much as it did. You know, you just got to outscore these teams. So, but yeah, lost that Clinton game. That ended our season there.
What was that final score?
And the final score on that one was 1-0.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, we had a couple guys that had pretty good days at the plate. You know, Evan Kells had three hits for us, so that was a kind of veteran leading the way. And Landon Sherm had two hits. So those two combined for five of our seven hits. So they played well. They brought their A game. But, yeah, we just couldn't get enough going, unfortunately, which ended the season for us. So.
Yeah, that playoff for you guys, that was tough. How many one-run games?
Yep, so yeah, our two losses for the playoffs were both one-run games, you know, against two quality teams. The first one we lost was against Dumont, and we lost that one 3-2. Again, we were right in that one. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a mistake here and there kind of cost us that game. And then this Clinton game, losing that 1-0. So,
you know, Matt, you say the bats weren't hot or going, but, you know, the pitching – in the region, in these Lando Ducks teams, it's just outstanding, I think.
Yep, yeah.
All the teams have outstanding pitchers.
Yep, yeah. I think, yeah, most teams have really good pitchers. You know, I think we're very fortunate as we have a lot of them. You know, it's we can do a variety of things.
Yep.
You know, it's we didn't have Blake or Avery at our disposal throughout the whole season with them playing Legion baseball, but yeah, the pitching that we have is great. You know, most teams have a good pitcher. You know, Mineota, you know, they have some veteran pitchers that know how to get the job done. You know, they beat Dumont and they beat Morris, you know, and I think shutting out both of them in the playoffs to make it to state. So they played really well. Their pitchers were well, and it means a lot to keep staying in the winner's bracket. So, you know, it's, I guess, good luck to those teams that are playing in the region tournament today.
All right. All right, let's just quickly wrap up the Mallard season here. I know maybe I don't know if you got some stats in front of you, or maybe talk about each player here for a bit.
Yeah, I can talk about each player. Yeah, I don't have any offensive stats or anything. I have some of the records for the pitchers, but you know, I'll start with the newcomers and the younger guys that we have. So, you know, you referred to Dylan Kiemig and Dylan Geiser as our baby ducks. But Dylan Kiemig, he came on for us after our first few games this year. young kid that just loves baseball, loves the game, great player, quick, good defensively. You know, he didn't get a lot of playing time with us, with him playing Junior Legion and Legion baseball, but you know, in the middle of the season, we had to plug him in, and he did just fine. He held his own against the older guys, with him just finishing up his sophomore season or sophomore year of high school. Then we had Dylan Geiser, again, a kid that just finished his junior year of high school, had, you know, coming off this year, playing a lot of baseball for missing the whole previous year. He pretty much settled in as our primary second baseman all year. Did get DH for, but, you know, Dylan Geiser defensively, you know, trying to think back, I don't know if he committed a single error at second base all year for us. Nice. So he played really well defensively, so it was exciting to see. You know, for those two young guys, I think it's going to be exciting to see the development over the next 1 to 2 years as they get stronger, get another year older, get more baseball under their belt. So great to have those guys on the team. Another newcomer was Landon Sherm. He joined after the first 3-4 games of the season. You know, kind of immediately just plugged him in at center field, just kind of see what would happen. We DH'd for him for a couple games, just so he could get acclimated, because a lot of guys coming from the high school to the town team, they don't get that the wood bat, I guess, feel, and they kind of struggle to hit. But, you know, once we let Landon take some swings, you know, he really didn't settle down. He really kind of carried the offense for us a lot of games this year, utilizing his speed with infield hits, but also you know, could hit some nice solid line drives to the outfield as well. So it was nice to have him. Another newcomer was Wyatt Halverson. We had got him over from Rosen Express. He had previously played for them. So Wyatt was an outstanding pitcher for us. I think he went 6-2 on the year. Also played third base, some outfield. But, you know, Wyatt's stick, I know, will come around in the future years. I know it wasn't what he had wanted this year, but, you know, we got a lot of faith in him.
Didn't he just get engaged?
Yep, and just got engaged as well. So congratulations, Wyatt. Yeah, thank you, Paul. I forgot about that. Yeah, so,
got to mention that.
Yeah, got to mention that. So Avery Whitnable, another young guy. He kind of sat on the bench for a few years for us and then kind of got an opportunity as he was hitting the ball. And kind of became one of our primary outfielders for us. And then, of course, for pitching, you know, pitched the big playoff game against Morris. It'd be nice to have him more on the mound in future years. Got Caden Fernals, him, and then Blake Wolschlager, you know, same age as Avery and Landon. But Caden and Blake kind of came onto the scene more so last year after sitting around for a little bit and waiting for their turn. But, you know, they've really done what they needed to do defensively in the outfield for Caden. And then backup catcher, and then at the plate. And Blake Wolschlager, just an outstanding defensive first baseman and a good stick as well. And then another left-handed pitcher that we can throw out there. So, you know, of those young guys, it's nice to have them. You know, seven guys that I just listed. You know, a nice core moving forward to mix in with the older guys. You know, it's, I hope that, you know, some of them are around for 10, 15, maybe even 20 years. So
like
it'd be,
you.
Yeah, like me. So it'd be good for them to carry the team. You know, the other guys, the guys that have been around a little bit longer, Mason Clark wasn't around much, but he filled in a backup catcher role. He had Leighton Whitnable in the outfield, very reliable outfielder. He's fast, good defender. So nice having him. Yeah, Evan Kells, one of the veterans for us. You know, he's like me, been around for 19, 20 years, so a long time. But a big-bodied third baseman can actually cover a lot of ground with his big body and a long extension. So, and then hit very well in the playoffs too. So it was nice to have him leading the way at third base for us. You know, Garrett Olson, kind of a halftime commitment from him with his new son born this year. So. But he was around when he could. Garrett's one of those that, you know, is a good defender wherever we plug him in, and he does have a really good swing. Just need to get him more at bats. So Garrett, if you're listening, I need to get you more at bats. Jared Royland, another guy that you could count on to be at all the games. Was also coaching Junior Legion, so when he was missing, it was because of that commitment. I thank him for working with the youngsters, and they had a great season as well. But Jared did what he needed to do when he was getting his opportunities to get on base. You know, it's he probably led the team, or maybe even set a team record for getting hit by pitch, probably between him or Wyatt. So not the way that people want to get on base, but. Yeah, Jared.
I think Cole Bungarden led a record in the state for being hit by a pitch when he was a Lockerball Eagle. I know that.
Yeah, but Jared, you know, his big body kind of stands out over the plate. So that's just his approach to the game, and doing whatever he can to help the team. Steven Inger was another guy that got some games in this year. He was more of our standby guy. He wasn't going to let us be short on team, but you know, when we needed him to fill in, he would make his way to the outfield and then get some bats as well. And then kind of the other three team leaders that we have, Brandon Bornhorst, Brandon Hill, Matt Inger. You know, Brandon Bornhorst, our horse on the mound. You know, he went 7-2 on the mound this year. I'm going to do whatever we need him to do to get a win. You know, Brandon Hill, another leader for us. He played some short after, you know, being an outfielder for a couple of years. But with Carter Amlin's absence, we had to move him to shortstop, and he filled that role nicely. Very good defender, very strong arm. And then Matt Inger, the guy behind the plate, been playing for many years. Pretty good defensive catcher, very strong hitter. You know, just kind of faltered at the end of the year when he got hurt, which is unfortunate for him. Not sure how many years he has left. He's kind of quiet on that subject, but hopefully have him back next year. And then Darby Biergon wasn't on the playoff roster, but he's an assistant coach for us, or, you know, we can call him Coach Biergon. Nice to have him around when he was able to be there. Just more of a coach mindset versus myself. I just kind of try to manage the game and set the lineups and let her go from there.
I was gonna say, how'd Matt Munson do this year?
Yeah, Matt, he left some to be desired, if I'm going to be honest. So, you know, throughout the year, trying to give guys more opportunities, so I kind of took a back seat as far as at-bats go, and that didn't work out well, because when you needed to perform, it'd just been nice to have more at-bats. So, you know, that's one thing going into next year. I hope that we have a lot of young guys that want to play baseball. Hopefully schedule some more games, more home games, you know, with our improvements going on, get more fans in the stands and utilize the awesome field that we're going to have. So
that's right.
It's going to be some exciting times for us.
So what was your record to end the season, Matt?
Yep. So overall record, we are 16-5, you know, probably the most wins that we have had for Mallard season in the last 20 years, I would say. I don't remember ever attaining that level. So, yeah, I'm sure back, we go way back, I'm sure that there's the new Mallards in the last 20 years, you know, 16 wins. So, you know, we accomplished a lot winning the Busch Light invite, you know, didn't get where we wanted to be playing in the final weekend, but still a very successful season. It's going to be nice to see how the young kids mix in with the older guys as they improve throughout the next 1-2 years. So, should be good times ahead for the Mallards.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt, for coming in during the summer every Saturday talking Madison Mallard baseball. Appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks, Paul. And just a shout out to Bart Hill for everything he's done, for getting the field together, Steven and Andrea Inger for the concession stand.
And your fans.
And all the fans. So,
we got a great following.
Yeah, we got a great following. You know, we had quite a few at our away games, but, you know, the home games too. It's a seems like that's been just really taken off for us over the years. So thank you to all the fans, and we appreciate your support, and hopefully that can continue next year. So.
All right, Matt Munson on Madison Mallard Baseball. Hey, that wraps up actually our baseball coaches show season. Coming up next here, I interviewed my son Brandon Ramo. Brandon's kind of in charge of the Junior American Legion Baseball in the state of Minnesota. Last weekend in Granite Falls was a junior state American Legion state tournament, and Brandon's going to talk about that a little bit. And then we've got a special guest for you. It's a special treat. It's just a teaser, so you want to stay tuned here to the Coach's Show.
Jim's Clothing and Sporting Goods, right downtown Dawson, Minnesota, is your one-stop shopping headquarters for graphic art design, embroidery, screen printing, and specialty advertising products. They specialize in corporate, team, and school clothing, hats, jackets, t-shirts, sweats, advertising specialties for any occasion like family reunions, summer camps, and more. Awards and sporting goods. At Jim's Clothing and Sporting Goods in Dawson, they offer personalized stock or custom graphic designs to fit any job you may need. Give them a call at 320-769-2317 for information. Information or look them up on the web at www.jimsclothing.com.
You'll find quality meat for your family's table at the Country Butcher, downtown Dawson. Stop by right downtown or give them a call, 320-769-2238. The Country Butcher will accept credit cards, checks, EBT, SNAP, and cash. This week, you'll find Redhead cheese 25% off, frozen ground chuck at just $4.50 a pound. Store hours Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Sunday by appointment. The Country Butcher will deliver fresh cut and frozen products free of charge during the city's infrastructure project. Call between 10 and noon each day for delivery that day or evening. The retail store will remain open and will cut fresh steaks and chops and have fresh ground beef on hand. That's the Country Butcher in Dawson. They're a cut above the rest. Sparkling ice water. Goodbye, plain. Hello, plain awesome. Sparkling ice is a fizzy, flavorful, and not bland beverage without all the calories. They're one of the biggest brands in the sparkling water category. If you're looking to put a little sparkle in your step, look no further than the delicious lineup of waters. Sparkling Ice, distributed by Madison Bottling Company, serving the local area for more than 100 years. This year marks 150 years of fair fun at the Little Minnesota State Fair, the Lacaparral County Fair in Madison. Come celebrate the tradition September 7th through the 10th. Mark that in your calendar. There will be $3,600 in cash drawings. Entertainment includes Molly B. and Squeeze Box with Ted Lang, the White Sidewalls, ATV Big Air Show, fireworks, hairball, and a whole lot more. Be listening for more details soon and check them out online at lqpfair.com. That's the Little Minnesota State Fair celebrating 150 years September 7th through the 10th. You won't want to miss it.
With me is Brandon Ramo. Brandon is the vice director of the Minnesota American Legion Baseball. And Brandon had a big weekend this past weekend in Granite Falls. Tell us about it and how it went.
Yeah, Granite Falls was able to host the Division II Junior American Legion Baseball Tournament. So for basically 9th and 10th grade kids, it's American Legion Baseball's last state tournament, as we have five state tournaments, actually, and so this is the latest one we have. And it was a great weekend. We had, you know, threat of rain all weekend, but nonetheless, we still got all our games in and only had 1 hour of delays. Some of the teams participating this year, we had LeSueur Henderson and Laverne. They were both making return trips. They had been there before. Montevideo was the defending state champions, and they qualified as well. Parker's Prairie was there. This is their first trip to the state tournament. Morris, they have been in the state tournament before. We've also had Esco in the tournament up in the Duluth area. They have been there before. And then Rushford making their first state tournament appearance. And then if you host the tournament, you also get to participate in the tournament. So Granite Falls was able to participate as well.
Brandon, how did the tournament go?
Yeah, so we ended up shortening our consolation bracket on Saturday to five innings due to the threat of rain, which sat and spun around in South Dakota and actually never rained in Granite Falls, but we're trying to be a little proactive. And out of our consolation bracket, Esco and Parker's Prairie emerged, and Esco ended up being our consolation champion by beating Parker's Prairie by a score of 10-3. And then in our kind of our championship round, Montevideo beat Laverne, and then Morris beat Granite Falls to get into the championship game. So the other two teams, Laverne and Granite Falls, played for that third place, and Laverne jumped out to a 6-0 lead, and then Granite Falls just chipped away and chipped away, but came up just a tad bit short, and Laverne was our third place winner at by a score of 7-5. I also should know Parker's Prairie was we give out a sportsmanship award. Parker's Prairie was our sportsmanship award winner. And then in the state championship game, a game that just clipped right along, Morris had four hits, Montevideo had three hits, and unfortunately for Montevideo, where I'm from, Morris was able to beat them by a score of 2-0.
So Morris is this year's state champions.
Yes, and then so the state championship 3 years in a row has stayed in American Legion District 7. Starbuck won it 3 years ago, Monty last year, and then Morris this year.
And Morris snapped Montevideo's long win streak there. What were they up, 32-33 game win streak they had?
Yeah, it was a two-year win streak. The last time they lost was the year we hosted the state tournament in 2021, this Junior Legion team. So, yeah, it was they were a little heartbroken at the end to go out that way. But nonetheless, I told them they got to keep their head high, as it's still a huge accomplishment to finish second in state.
That's right. An outstanding season. Great job by the coaching staff there for Montevideo as well. Who are all the coaches?
Well, we got Tim Epema is the head coach, and then Mark Reitinger helps him. We also have Josh Dak, Adam Eakes, and I think Derek Webb came and helped every once in a while, as did Jordan Thompson.
Okay. I understand you went to, you had a banquet. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so teams come in on Thursday. Thursday's afternoon throughout the day, and they check in. We do check-in rosters and things, and then we have a banquet, and the banquet was held at Fagan Fighters World War II Museum, which was probably the most fitting place for an American Legion banquet. We had Brian Robbie speak from Bethel head coach, originally from New Ulm, so kind of a small-town guy that has done well for himself in baseball and had a great message for the kids. We also had a 101-year-old fighter pilot veteran speak to the kids as well, and which was just fantastic. And he got a standing ovation for everything that he has done. And so Granite Falls really put out the red carpet for these guys. It was a great banquet on Thursday out there. And then games kick off on Friday. We had four games on Friday. We were scheduled to play four games on Saturday, but we ended up playing five. And then we play the final two on Sunday.
Okay. Richter Field in Granite Falls is has a lot of history in it. I know the Baseball Association there has made a lot of improvements at the baseball at Richter Field, haven't they?
Yeah, and so again, you know, Granite Falls, again, pulling out that red carpet for these boys, and have done a lot of facility upgrades here within the last year. And for those of you that have been at Richter Field prior to that, even this year, you would have said, wow, this is a great facility. They even made it better. They had new dugouts, netting behind home plate, new concrete poured. They got this nice field house where the teams could bat. And, you know, Richter Field has also hosted the amateur state tournament. And so, I mean, it's something that they're kind of accustomed to. They've done before. And I tell you, Mike and Amy Richter did a fabulous job over there, as well as everyone on their community.
Okay, talk a little bit about the tournament itself then. How many junior Legion baseball teams are there in the state, and how do you get to state? And talk about the tournament a little bit.
So roughly we have around 70 teams statewide. Interesting fact is actually Division II Junior Legion Baseball was actually born in District 7 right here. We started as 15, 16 teams in 2017. And it's grown statewide to about 70 teams. And so we have what we call sub-states around the state. So the state is divided into seven different regions, basically. And then they're fairly equally, about 8 to 10 teams per region. And then those 8 to 10 teams fight in the playoffs to get their berth into the state tournament. So, you know, and some of these get some rivals. So you'll see, you know, Montevideo and Morris are high school rivals, but they are separated by sub-states, so they're in different sub-states. So Morris qualified out of the North Central sub-state, and Montevideo out of the South Central sub-state.
Also, Western Minnesota was represented well with Laverne in it too, right?
Yeah, and so interestingly enough, and this kind of shows you the quality of baseball we have in our part of the state, is you know, our first game of the day was LeSueur Henderson taking on Laverne, and Laverne ended up winning that game 9-0. Second game of the day featured Montevideo and Parkers Prairie. Montevideo ended up moving on, beating Parkers Prairie 4-3. And then Morris and Esco, which was probably the game of the tournament, as Esco was a fabulous team. Morris eked by them 3-2. And then on the nightcap on Friday night, Granite Falls beat Rushford. And so everybody that was in our championship round was basically local. You have Laverne, Montevideo, Morris, and Granite Falls, which is fabulous to see. It also made us make some decisions that we did later in the day to get teams out of there on Saturday before rain came in as well, with all the traveling teams being in the consolation bracket. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear any comments from other parents or other coaches from other teams about the tournament?
Yeah, and so one of my favorite things, you know, we've had probably half these teams qualify for tournaments in the past, but a couple teams, this is their first opportunity, and you know, they just get blown away by the way they get treated. They get housed. There's a team host that takes care of them. They get fed. They have a fabulous banquet. You know, they only play really one game a day, so they get some downtime, and their hosts try to do a good job of, you know, sending them to different places around the area, to, you know, the popcorn stand in Granite Falls, to, you know, maybe Art's Dairy Freeze over here in Montevideo. So, you know, just unique things about our area. And so and fans alike. You know, they walk in, and some of these places play on fields that, you know, aren't nearly as nice as Richter Field. So they walk in, and, you know, you think of the Field of Dreams quote. You know, you walk in, you go, "Is this heaven?" And you go, "No, it's Iowa. No, it's Southwest Minnesota."
Mm-hmm. Okay, talk about the Montevideo team. Pretty impressive that what Coach Epham has done in the last few years with the Montevideo Junior Legion team.
Yeah, so Montevideo, the defending state champs from last year, went undefeated last year throughout the whole year, and they were actually undefeated throughout all of this year until the championship game, and ran into a very good Morris team, and losing the championship 2-0 to Morris. And you know, like I said, we played them in the high school season. As I actually coached this team in the spring as a JV coach here in Montevideo. But we ended up splitting with Morris in the spring, and you know, we felt good about our chances, I know, going into that championship game. And I tell you what, it's just a great group of kids. They play hard. They play baseball the right way. They play good defense. And we have a lot of spend a lot of time hitting, and you kind of see that throughout the year as we outscored our opponents this summer. I think it was like 126 to 20 or something all summer, and some pretty solid pitching. And so I tell you what, we're really excited about our future of Montevideo baseball, and we're going to have some young guys coming through as well. And so it was fun to see that all District 7 final Montevideo Morris, that Richter Field was packed with purple and orange, and it was just a great environment. The rain stayed away, and we got our game in.
Well, the West Central Conference in high school baseball is going to be pretty competitive the next couple of years, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, and I was just talking to our head coach, Tim Epham, about that here the other day, and I just said, you know, we've been middle of the road for a long time, and now we get a team that I'd almost call them an exceptional team. They're really good. And I tell you what, we're going to have Morris is going to be really good with us. Minnewaska is going to be up there as well. And, you know, you go up to Sauk Center and Melrose, those two teams aren't slouches at all either. And so it's going to be a dogfight, which hopefully will prepare us well for our section tournament. And you look for us in Montevideo, Laverne is in our section as well. They're in one of the teams in the semifinals. So, yeah, it's going to be should be some fun couple years of baseball here in Southwest Minnesota.
Where's the Junior Legion state tournament next year, then? Who gets the host?
So next year we'll be back to St. Charles, down by Rochester, Minnesota. They hosted it in 2019. They did a great job down there. Scott McCready is the athletic director for St. Charles High School, and he's also a Legion, one of our Legion baseball board members. And if you think Granite Falls laid out the red carpet, come down to St. Charles. He's going to... He kept saying, he kept thinking, he was there this weekend, kept going, "I wonder how I can do better than this. I don't know if I can do better than this." His comment was, "I hope none of these teams make it next year, because we want all new teams that don't know what to expect, because Granite Falls did such a great job." And, you know, that's the fun thing about this tournament is, you know, you get those next year's hosts coming in and seeing what the previous host did, and how do we make it better. And so, you know, starting at 16 teams in Southwest Minnesota and now growing to what it's become is just been really fun to watch, and great for baseball all around the state, and great for American Legion baseball as well.
All right. Real good, Brandon. Thank you. And, yeah, hard to believe summer's over and baseball's wrapping up here.
Yeah, you know, you got that late spring. It was we had snow, I think, on the ground for a long time, so spring was condensed, and we had a couple teams make some runs to the state tournament, so some of their summers were condensed, and yeah, it goes by quick, and next thing you know, that snow will be flying again, and we're going to be cold.
All right, thanks, Brandon.
Yep, thank you.
Brandon Ramo, Vice Director of the Minnesota American Legion Baseball.
See a movie at the Grand Theater in Madison, showing Friday, August 11th through Monday, August 14th in Theater 1, Sound of Freedom, rated PG-13. And in Theater number 2, it's the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, rated PG. That's Sound of Freedom in Theater 1, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Theater 2, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, 7 o'clock at the Grand in Madison.
West Gone Out of Holloway is having a customer appreciation Thursday, August 31st. West Gone will be hosting an appreciation for all patrons, and we hope to see you there. More information to come. Also, West Gone is now hiring all positions. You can go on their website at west-con.com and apply online. Also a reminder, the Westcon management and staff will be at the Swift County Fair Thursday, August 17th at 5 o'clock in front of the Chuck Brown Building, and they'll be handing out free Rit Beer floats. That's Thursday, August 17th, 5 o'clock at the Swift County Fair.
Paul Ramel here for Q92 Sports. Well, in the studio with us, we have a guest. His name is Matt Tollefson, and hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Good, Paul. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Beautiful weather, huh?
Absolutely. If summer could be like this all the time, we'd be just fine.
Yeah, no humidity.
Uh-huh. Ideal.
I don't like the sweat. How about you?
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Well, I've asked Matt to come in and talk about his podcast that he does for South Dakota State football and sports in general. And first of all, Matt, why don't you just introduce yourself to us, to our listeners?
Sure. Well, I'm Matt Tollefson, live in Appleton, and just a huge Jackrabbit sports fan. Went to South Dakota State, met my wife there at South Dakota State. And
Kelsey,
yep. And just kind of wanted to give back to the program, give back to the school, and creating this blog and podcast is one way that I do it.
All right, great. And you work at Appleton Area Health?
Yep, work at Appleton Area Health. I'm the development director there.
Oh, you like it over there?
Oh, really enjoy it. It's a lot like my hometown back in South Dakota. I grew up in Clark, South Dakota, similar size, it's a nice town.
Yeah, I see your video podcasts once in a while that we use for Wellness Wednesday here on Q92.
So we do the podcast. We're on a break right now, but season two for that is coming soon.
Oh,
so
exciting.
This fall.
Can't wait. You do a great job with that.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm a big college football fan, as you are, and we're going to focus on your podcast. Yep. It's a very popular podcast. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how it got started, Matt?
Sure. So at the time, I was really into recruiting and looking at how the Jacks were doing recruiting wise. A member of, the athletic department down there reached out and said, "Hey, would you be interested in, maybe starting a podcast or a blog, starting a blog?" Kicked it around for a little bit. Our second child was born, Lennon, and I was on paternity leave, had some extra time. She was such a good baby. And so it was, all right, let's do this. Let's start.
Okay.
And so my first blog post was actually written while on maternity leave about my favorite memories from SDSU athletics over the years when I was a student and fan. 2 years later, hundreds of articles later, we started the podcast. And now we do 2 to 3 weekly shows. We cover wrestling. We cover basketball. And just stay very busy. But definitely football is still our big emphasis that we have 6 people on our team, just other fans, former athletes, just really have a blast with it.
So you went from blogging, writing, to a video podcast.
Yep. So my show streams on Sunday nights or 8 o'clock during football season. And then there's another show that streams live on Facebook or YouTube, midweek, that Tuesday, Wednesday timeframe.
Okay. So, awesome. Yeah. So, the Jackrabbits football team has been very successful over the last few years anyway.
Yeah.
Long time, I should say.
Yeah, I think that the number now is they've made 11 straight appearances in the FCS playoffs, which every team aspires to do, right? Is to make the playoffs. It's kind of like, every college wants to make the, the big dance, March Madness for basketball. For FCS football, it's all about making the playoffs. And the Jacks have done that 11 years, and they've slowly crept up and done better and better. But they always kind of ran up against NDSU in the playoffs, and it fizzled over. Everyone's well aware of NDSU's 9 championships that they've had in the last handful of years, but a dozen years or so. Very impressive what they've done up there in Fargo. And the Jacks have really built their team to match what NDSU does. Yeah. And that kind of culminated last year down in Frisco, where they play the national championship game when the Jacks had a huge victory down there.
So very popular. A lot of people, you've packed the stadium Saturdays.
Yes.
And in Brookings. And we're pretty lucky in our Q92 listening area to have a Division I football program where it's in driving distance, you know, a couple hours away, and you can go watch the best football around.
Right, and we were just talking before the show. I always love to joke that it feels like this area is about a third Bison fans, a third Gopher fans, and a third Jackrabbit fans. And, you know, you get the blue and yellow and the green and gold and the maroon and gold all in the same gym and stuff sometimes. Yep. And it's pretty funny to see just the split in our area, how it breaks down.
Okay. Well, I'm really interested in your podcast. Tell us, you even got some outstanding sponsors. You have some sponsors sponsoring your podcast. How'd that come about, Matt?
Yeah, really just organically. It's people that are fans of the show, and they want to support it through their business. I don't know if I can mention them. Can
yeah,
I?
You okay, can. Absolutely.
So we have Culver's, you know, out of Brookings and Watertown.
Love the ice creamer, though.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Yep. And so that was just kind of a joke that was born out of it. Their general manager or owner from those locations was listening, and we always talked about a 50 Butterburger if we were gonna, you know, beat a team bad or something like that. Or some of the bets would be Scoopy tokens. You know, I bet so and so is gonna win. I'll bet you a Scoopy token, which is their free ice cream.
Yep.
So that was pretty funny. Other ones we've had, you know, heavy machinery for farm and dirt work and things like that. Just, you know, guys are in their combines listening and. Yep. You know, they maybe share that what they're listening to the implement dealers and things like that. Obviously, the Jackrabbit Bookstore, you know, we have a lot of fans just to make sure that they get that market. So,
What's that called? Jackrabbit Central?
Jackrabbit Central. Yep, that's where you can get all of your SDSU gear if you want.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you are on Sunday nights, you said, right?
Yep, we're on Sunday nights. Yeah, 8 o'clock.
So how do you do that technology-wise? I mean, you're all not in the same building.
Yeah. So we have a platform, and this is what we actually use for the Appleton Area Health Podcast too. It's StreamYard.com.
StreamYard, okay.
Yep, and you can set up free accounts, but there's also paid levels too. You can promote it and set it all up with, you know, the screens how you want and your logo and sponsor logos, and there's audience participation from YouTube and Facebook where they can type in their questions. Super easy to share with guests. So yeah, it makes it very simple, because you're right. One of my partners is down in Mankato. We've had a partner down in Texas, in Nebraska, a few guys down in the Sioux Falls area. So yeah, we really, you know, we're all able to work together and kind of across the country here. So.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Some other stuff you'd like to mention too, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, I'd really like, you know, just to talk a little bit about this Dakota Marker series with North Dakota State and South Dakota State.
It's big.
Yeah, it's big. this game routinely sells out, whether it's in Fargo or Brookings. And I'd encourage folks to, if you haven't been to a game in a while, get to Brookings on November 4th, 2 p.m. That's the Dakota Marker game this year. There's still about 2,000 tickets left. The Jacks have already sold out one of their games this year for Montana State. Yep. Stadium seats just under 20,000 people, so it's a really fun atmosphere. And NDSU, you know, they're calling it their vengeance tour, is what they've already called it in their media up there. Yeah, so they want to get back on top.
Yep. They want it back.
Yep. The Jacks have won 4 in a row in the series, and it's kind of interesting, you know, since 2004 when these two programs went Division I together, NDSU's won 14 times and STSU's won 10.
Wow.
So fairly even, you know, on the split there. So
that's awesome. Cool. The marker, that's pretty heavy, I understand.
Yeah. So
really heavy.
Yeah. When I was a student, Paul, I actually had the opportunity to be a kind of a field marshal for this Dakota Marker game. They have like the student association from both schools pick representatives to guard it on the field.
Game?
Yep. Oh. And I was up in Fargo and I got to be that. And me and my partner, other SDSU student, lifted it up off the podium and handed it to the team. We were right in front of the NDSU student section. There weren't some very nice words being said in that one.
What team did you hand it to?
Yeah, so we handed it to the Jacks.
Okay, awesome.
But that thing is heavy. Yeah. You got to be prepared for that, because you don't want to drop it on your toes.
Right.
That would hurt.
Yeah, I see. Video of it, and football players have a hard time holding it above their head and stuff like that, or if they even can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, that's good. And when is that game again?
Yeah, that's November 4th, 2 p.m. in Brookings.
And that's in Brookings.
Yep.
So it's sold out?
And not sold out yet. About 2,000 tickets left. Okay. So if you are interested, I'd encourage you to get tickets and go. Yep.
All right. What other games are important to the football, Jackrabbit football season?
Yeah, this year, mentioned kind of the Montana State game. And that's going to be on September 16th in Brookings again. Montana State was there in the semifinals last December, freezing cold, kind of an ice bowl type of game. Blast, and that was the Jacks, you know, beat them pretty badly in that game. The other game to kind of look forward to is a fun game, and this one's on September 16th. The Montana State is September 9th. But September 16th, the Jacks are actually playing at Target Field against Drake up in the cities. Right. And so that is going to be a blast.
That's good for the SDSU alumni that live in the Twin Cities area, I guess.
We, for Jackrabbit Illustrated, we're actually hosting a tailgate party at Cowboy Jacks up there.
Cowboy Jacks.
At Cowboy Jacks. We got asked to host the party there. So
nice.
We're pretty excited about that.
Will you do a podcast from there maybe or not?
We may do a live, just a quick live show. We'll see how it goes that day. Awesome. But luckily with the technology, you know, we can pretty much broadcast from anywhere or at least record from anywhere. So that's a game to watch. And then Hobo Day, which is in mid-October. That's SDSU's homecoming. If you've never been to Hobo Day, there's a parade. There's all sorts of activities throughout the day. And then the football game at 2 p.m., an absolute blast. Yeah. Yep,
no, everybody knows about Hobo Day.
Yeah.
The city of Brookings really gets involved in that too, don't they? Or the whole community.
Yeah, it's always promoted kind of as the one-day largest event in South Dakota.
Oh, really?
So, it is. Yep, it's monstrous. If you haven't been in a few years, go. It's just, there's no hotel rooms. There's going to be limited tickets for the game, but it's just, it's worth it. It's a crazy experience.
When I went to Brookings to watch the SDSU football, I always picked the Northern Iowa game to go to because I was always so competitive.
Yeah, and again, it's Northern Iowa again this year for Hobo Day, and I'm actually picking Northern Iowa to win that game.
Okay.
Because the Jacks have lost two or three times in a row when they play you and I on Hobo Day.
Oh, no.
And it just, it doesn't go well. It's a sloppy game. Usually it rains. So it just, I'm ready for the disappointment just in case it happens. So.
All right. All right. Anything else you got there, Matt?
Or? Yeah. You know what? SDSU brings back a ton of talent this year.
Okay.
The Shrine Bowl, which is one of the top senior showcases for senior players for the draft, released their top 1,000 list. SDSU had 7 players on that list.
Oh, wow.
And I know that out of 1,000, that seems pretty goofy, but that's the most out of any FCS or G5 program in the country.
Okay.
They have a running back this year that's likely to get drafted 3rd to 5th round, somewhere in there. 2 offensive linemen that are going to go early, a tight end, and then a couple wide receivers that are all on this list. So if you want to see, you know, some really good talent, like, it's not that far away. Brookings is 1.5 hours away, right?
It's an easy drive.
So there's some really good football being played in Brookings, and I encourage people to check it out.
All right. And check out your podcast.
Yeah.
So how can people find you on your podcast? Where can they go to find the podcast?
Yes, absolutely. So we're on Twitter, at Jack Illustrated. On Facebook, you can just search Jackrabbit Illustrated. And then on YouTube, you can just search Jackrabbit Illustrated. And we'll pop up. Would really appreciate any likes and subscribes and tell other people about it.
All right, do that right now. Jackrabbit Illustrated, right? Jackrabbit Illustrated. Check it out and give them a like and give them a watch and a listen, right?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Do you really enjoy that? You really do.
Absolutely. It's I'm not a good golfer, as you know, might be aware. I'm not a good golfer. I don't hunt much. I don't fish much. So this is my hobby. Yeah.
All right. It's a great hobby. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, good luck to the Jackrabbits this year. What do you got them for a record?
I have them at 10-1. Right? They're losing the one game. I think they're going to repeat as national champs. They bring back a ton of talent.
Go Rabbits.
There we go.
Thanks, Matt, for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Matt Tollefson with Jackrabbit Illustrated, talking about the SDSU Jackrabbits, mainly the football team.
Could there be a better name? Auto Value Parts Stores. They aren't just about air fresheners or fuzzy dice. Auto Value Parts Stores are all about parts, auto parts, and advice. Pros who know auto parts with tons of tips when you need them the most. You want real value? Don't go to a place with a cute name. Go to Auto Value. Could there be a better name? I didn't think so. Your Auto Value Parts Store. We've got the parts, we've got the smarts.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Thanks for listening to the Saturday Morning Baseball Coaches Show here on Q92. Tune in next week at 9 o'clock with more interviews with area baseball coaches right here on Q92. See you next Saturday morning. Have a great day.
Madison Dawson, time for news and weather brought to you by Hendricks Farmers Lumber, located in Hendricks, Minnesota.
The latest from Hawaii, I'm Paul Stevens.